That's the Juju Orchestra with the, it's a 10-year-old group based in Germany, and they have great respect for any kind of music with a unique style and beat, from tango to techno to funk and jazz. This one is called This Is Not a Tango, from their album Bossa Nova Is Not a Crime. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Thursday, February the 13th. And a couple of things I want to touch on, but I'll be talking principally about our president, or your president. I give him to you. Well, first up is CNN, what's happening over there. We had talked about CNN a lot when we were talking about the coverage, or the so-called coverage, of Dennis Rodman and his colleagues, the trip to the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And I did say that CNN has been struggling because it's been losing audience share like crazy. And with that, of course, advertising. And so comes word that Anderson Cooper's AC-360 later is getting the axe. So that's the first to fall. Other programs surely will follow. I did make a notation that Chris Cuomo's New Day, which had lost about one-third of its audience in just about 3 or 4 months, is also teetering on the brink. So they're shuffling things around at CNN. They're trying to figure out what will work. And it's all because people are not watching. And that's true, by the way, for the cable industry itself. A lot of people are getting their information differently. They're accessing information, and they actually are functioning themselves as their own producers. I mean, they decide what they want to watch, how long they want to watch it, and where to find the information. And they hop around. They don't get their information anymore from just one source. That those days are dead, absolutely dead. So now that people are functioning as their own producers, they're going to find their own programming. They're going to put together their own information package themselves. It has posed quite a challenge to the cable network and television generally as well. And that is also an interesting a point to make at the time today. And it's a very interesting thing psychologically how Comcast is positioning its desire to buy out Time Warner Cable. Now, the first thing that they're doing is they're announcing it as a done deal. Okay, this is done. We're going to give them $45.2 billion, and we'll, you know, assume control of Time Warner, and we'll become the monopoly. And they have announced it, and this is a really important thing to take note of. They know that there's going to be tremendous backlash and opposition to it on the consumer end, and so they get out front of the story by telling you this is going to happen, and here's why it's a good thing. MSNBC dutifully has been covering this story. MSNBC, which is owned by Comcast, the last show I saw in which they discussed this proposed takeover, is what a stunning story it is. Comcast is just a stunning success. What a great, great company. This company has come from nowhere, and it has built and built it. It's the American story. This is a coverage MSNBC is giving to a takeover and the prospect of a monopoly, all right? So, and it hasn't wavered too much that from that line on other news networks that are covering the story, but it's already announced. They're pouring a lot of money, Comcast and Time Warner, they're pouring a lot of money into this psychological conditioning, telling people it's a done deal. And all we have to do is just sign on the dotted line, but for all intents and purposes, this thing is in the bag. It's going to happen. Well, what is interesting here, and it comes to the president, you see, these things, these monopolies and these mega money deals and the huge amount of cash flowing around and things that are happening, whether they're good for the consumer or not, the administration, though, of course, it's very democratic, you know, and it's about regulating. They have no interest in regulating anything. There's no interest in regulating anything. It's about money. And how did Comcast get to this point of being able to basically announce, we're going to do this. We're going to take Time Warner, and they're going to sell their shares to us, and we'll become the big behemoth of the internet and of information dissemination. They're going to control nationally the bulk, a huge chunk of the market. It is said because politically it's been done. You know, and you say to yourself, well, shouldn't the administration have some concern about this? Shouldn't there be some kind of word coming from the administration about the anxiety people are having, not just consumers, who will absolutely get screwed. You are going to pay more for your services, and that may not be all. You know, when you have a company, a private sector company, controlling, in effect, what you would construe to be public access to information, the infrastructure of information. This is huge. It is the same craziness that you see in the United States, where the major transportation systems are privately owned and controlled. In any other country, they can't allow that. You know, you should have a nationalized system so that you don't get this profiteering going on, that at any time the industry wishes, it can shut down, it can squeeze the entire country. The Obama administration has taken a view of this sector in the same way that they have treated the banking community. It's as if, well, we can't do anything except, you know, well, when they do bad things, we can fine them, and that's it. The Obama administration, where banking is concerned, and we've talked about this time and again, about the outrageous conduct within the banking industry, and there have been no convictions. There's nobody gone to jail, really. There have been no structural responses from the administration about how to regulate, because that's what they're supposed to be doing. If you're issuing the charters, you're supposed to be regulating the industry, the insurance industry, the banking industry, the healthcare industry, all the things you're supposed to be regulating and you're supposed to have authority over. The Obama administration's position uniformly is, look, folks, you do what you want, just don't get outrageous. Don't frighten the horses. You know, just do whatever it is you need to do. If you really cross the line, understand that we'll be forced to take some kind of action. But here, you're not hearing anything at all from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And here's one of the biggest deals going down. They've already announced that it will happen. They're so brazen about it. They're not even, this is not even a question. They're saying this is what will happen. We will control the market. We will have the infrastructure in our hands. We would be the ones who will decide whether we will raise the rates or not. Who gets to get preferential traffic on our lines? This is what the industry is saying. And the reason all of this is happening is that there are political operatives who are very closely connected to this administration and who basically get exactly what they want. In the case of Comcast, we have Michael Powell, the son of Colin Powell, who was former chairman of the FCC. He is now the top lobbyist for the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, NCTA. You know that that's how this thing has been done. They leave the administration, they leave political circles, they go into some kind of administrative capacity in trade or some other place where big money is exchanged, money and power, and he ends up as the guy who is facilitating all of this on the inside. He's talking to other colleagues that he had great relationships with when he was FCC chairman, so there will be no opposition from the FCC. And huge money. He already got the FCC basically to back away from whether how they define what services are provided, whether it is that they are providing informational services or whether they're providing just a conduit for informational services. These little things that translate to billions and billions of dollars of revenue, they enacted that as if it were democratically done, all above board, no suspicion whatsoever. And the Justice Department isn't doing anything about it. It probably can't regulate industry. But guess what? The president can. With his executive power. Now we need to see the president use that pen. Use your pen, Mr. President, and say, hey, we are not going to allow monopolies here. This is very troubling. We need to have hearings. We need to really scrutinize this deal. We need to hear from all parts of the industry. We need to hear from consumers. Because what's going to happen is that all throughout the United States, where Comcast will now have a huge chunk of the market, in all of the major metropolitan markets, they will dominate. You will have no choice as a consumer but to pay up whatever it is they think they want to charge you for, whether you watch programs or not. Here, this is the bundle. You pay for this. Your bill, and they will determine. Every person that we have as a customer is going to have to pay at least $150 to $200 a month. That's going to be our margin of profit, and there's nothing to stand in their way. They get what they want. So the president here is the same millage, if you will, of the corrupt administrations of yore, you know, where they just basically see their role as assisting the people who have huge money to do whatever they wish to do. There is no definitive response yet from this administration about this deal that has been announced as a done deal. No fight from the administration. The FCC has nothing to say. And the president with his pen and his phone also has nothing to say. The Justice Department has nothing to say. And we are looking at the making of a behemoth, a big money behemoth in the making right before our eyes. No response whatsoever. How about that? Isn't that great? And that shows you that irrespective of the label that these administrations wear, whether it's Republican or Democrat, they all think the same. It's all about money and who has the power to influence whom on the basis of money. And we see the incestuous nature of that power arrangement where you come out of the FCC. In fact, they put it up on the website. They're not hiding it. I mean, the National Cable and Telecommunications Association is not hiding it. They are saying, look at these people that we have. These are the people we have captured from the political realm, and they're now our big guys. That's what they say. You read the bios and you see how, they plucked this one from this administration who had a high profile job there, and that other one was plucked and now he's a big deal in the organization. That's what's happening. So don't be fooled with this notion that somehow Democrats or this particular president of this administration in this respect is going to be any different from Clinton or from George H.W. Bush or from George W. Bush. No difference in this respect. It's a nest of vipers. They're all about money. But let us see what the response is going to be, because, again, the psychological conditioning, they've paid a lot of people a lot of money to get this thing going as if and get it reported as a done deal. They have already conditioned the public that this is what's going to happen. They have already conditioned their shareholders. This is going to happen. And they've done so clearly confident that there will be no opposition. There hasn't been any opposition so far, so there's nothing to impede their progress along the lines of profitability. They are on the road to big profits, and we would have yet another monopoly, despite all the antitrust laws and all the other things that are supposed to be concerned about the emergence of monopolies. We will see no resistance to something like this. Now, here's an interesting thing. The internet actually is a form of infrastructure. Yes, it is infrastructure, just like a bridge, just like roads, just like a railway system. It's infrastructure. You would think that a president who is so into the internet and all of that stuff, because he did get a lot of money from that sector, you would think that they should be thinking along the lines of the government, since it invented the internet, going the extra mile. Create your own internet infrastructure across the country. Install these high-powered cables and these super-fast cables. Do that like any other European nation has, or some of the emerging, like Singapore or Japan, where you have these fantastic systems. The U.S., by the way, the internet service in the U.S. is way slower than many parts of the world. Joe Biden was talking about LaGuardia Airport being a third world airport. Well, the infrastructure in the United States is a third world infrastructure, technologically speaking. There are nations where, lightning speed already available. Since it's infrastructure, why can't this brilliant president say, you know what? We are going to embark on one of the most ambitious programs. We'll probably take it one city at a time. That's good enough for me. But we will build our own technological infrastructure. And that would provide hundreds and thousands and millions of jobs. And it will keep the United States at a level to be competitive globally. But no, they wouldn't do that. What they will do is hand the power to not only regulate the market in the hands of the people who dominate the market and the money that they will make in the market, but they also give these companies, by so doing, the authority and the power literally to own the infrastructure, which is insane when you think about it. So if tomorrow Comcast should have it in mind to say, well, you know what, we don't feel like disseminating anything, the whole world will shut down. The U.S. is going to be in the hands of these private monopolies. You know, this is amazing, the kind of thinking that we're seeing here. But it is also very dangerous. And it is a lesson to us as people in the United States who look to the government to do the right thing. And what does the government do? It does this nasty business. It's in your face. They're not even hiding this anymore. This is, we have the power. We've got the money. We can do whatever we want. You are our captive. You will have no choice in the matter. And again, psychologically, this thing hasn't actually been consummated, but the psychological message, they are going for broke on this thing, and they're hammering it. This is a done deal. It's okay. And we have MSNBC China. Oh, it is a stunning company, they say. You know how dumb a guy sounds saying it's a stunning company? It's just stunning. The things that the Comcast has done, it's a great American story. Why shouldn't it be a monopoly? That's what you get. Well, your president went to Michigan last week to sign the Farm Bill that supposedly is this great prize that was won, the prize being that finally the Democrats and the Republicans have seen a way to work together and to actually be productive. And what they came up with was this Farm Bill, and for which we, the people, should be eternally grateful that they've actually done something, that they've actually produced something. So he goes to Michigan State University, to make the point that, of course, his concern is about rural America. He switched. He used to be middle-class America. But, you know, this is 2014, midterm elections and all. So he's rural for the time being. He went rural. And I'm talking about this really to show you the cynicism, okay? This president is so completely detached from the day-to-day struggles of people, I mean real struggles. And I'm glad, I really am happy that the country has found a way to assist farmers who are in trouble. I understand that. That's great. And they should, because the farming community, of course, was decimated. Another victim to agribusiness and so forth. The small farmers, they're not making money at all. If you were to understand what it takes for a farmer to produce, let's say, a quart of milk, you wonder how they could possibly remain in business. The margin of profit is so low, it is almost criminal what some farmers have to deal with, only because that's been their business for generations, and they have a particular affinity to that field, and so they can't part ways with it. It's a tradition. It's been deeply ingrained in their blood and so forth, and the culture in which they live supports the allegiance to farming, even when farming isn't a rewarding field. So he goes to Michigan, And he celebrates the fact that this bill is he's signing the bill there to symbolically convey that the administration is farmer friendly. We get the point, we get the symbolism and so forth. But I also am thinking, well, Michigan, let's see. Michigan happens to be, hey, you know, Detroit is in Michigan. Detroit is in Michigan. How about that? He can go to Michigan without addressing Detroit. Okay. I'm glad and I understand you want to talk about this farm bill. Even as you take much needed funds away from the food stamp program or the food supplement program, which is a lifeline for 1 in 7 Americans. If you were to say the statistic abroad, people will just faint. They can't put that together with the word America, land of plenty, where 1 in 7 people depend on food stamps for sustaining themselves and their families. And right there, in the state of Michigan, it happens to be the most populous county, Wayne County, where Detroit is located. And you don't have a clue, really, about how important it is that you have refused to physically be in Detroit, to actually talk about Detroit and to take on this question of Detroit as a symbolic problem of major cities across this country that are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. Of course, we know in Detroit that we've discussed here about the ruse that is being pulled in Detroit to compel it to go into bankruptcy, even though it wasn't and shouldn't be. But this president can compartmentalize suffering in such a way that he sees you when he sees you. And most of the time, he's not seeing his people suffering at all. He's not seeing their suffering. You can go to Michigan and still ignore Detroit. And now you can switch and talk about how dedicated you are to rural Americans. Because what? It is convenient. It's convenient for you to do this. This is 2014. And one of your key supporters in this bill is from Michigan, who is up for re-election, and you do it because it is important that the Democrats hold on to a majority in the House. See, cynicism, complete cynicism. Joe Biden went to Detroit during the auto show. I mean, in the middle of all of that chaos, they found money to put on a splendid auto show, even though they're not making cars anymore. And in Detroit, physically in the city, the vice president can't understand what's going on either. He has nothing to say about what's going on in Detroit, except the cars are great. The cars at the car show, you should come down. You should see what kind of wonderful cars are available for you to buy. Not that we are manufacturing in Detroit anymore, but you should come down here. Great. Fantastic. That's what I mean. So people should understand that the level of cynicism has reached, I think, just historic proportions. Here we have a president elected on a tidal wave of hope by people who were suffering and people who were despairing about their future. A country beaten up, again, by the excesses that the government failed to tame in the banking world. In fact, they aided and abetted it. The excesses in all these industries that ended up putting the entire nation in the tank. And here we have this president coming into office with this kind of investment, deciding, hey, it's still about me. He is more dedicated to the rich, to the wealthy, to the politically well-connected, and he is absolutely dedicated to fulfilling his given mission. He was brought into office by interests who would have profited and actually have profited very nicely from being in, from him being in office. He has formed a kind of protective shell, a shield for them. And money is, I mean, huge amounts of money being made all over the place. He's in the thick of it. He loves it. And there is no preferential treatment at all about the social conditions here in the United States. No preferential treatment, no priority is given to solving the problems. We are in year five. We have unemployment. In fact, the last figures coming out just today about the people who are jobless, the people who are long-term unemployed, the people who see no hope of being employed, people who have gone from being full-time employed to part-time employed and underemployed, people who have given up about employment. The system is falling apart, and all they are worried about right now, and what this president has devoted his time to, is securing the interest of those people whose only plan is to be in office, because being in office gives them access to the power and to the money that they want and need to benefit. That's it. That's what politics is. It's not about public service. It's not about, well, I'm here because I truly care about what's going on in this country. I truly care about what's happening to our people. No. Politics is now entrepreneurship. I said that. Everybody in politics pretty much is an entrepreneur. How can I benefit from being in office? It's ingrained in the culture, and it's now a part of a kind of in-your-face insult to the community, too, where they say, you know why I'm here. You know, we had Ray Nagin, the mayor, the former mayor of New Orleans, being convicted on 20 of 21 counts of bribery and whatnot. He says he will appeal. The problem here is when you see it in context, you see how ubiquitous, how universal this attitude is. You are in office because it gives you access like you've never had before to money and power and a way to enrich yourself. Public office is not about public service at all. That's done. That's dead. The Clintons started that in-your-face business. I mean, no apologies. You know, I'm here to make money. Let's talk about money and how I make money, and that's the only thing I'm interested in about. Yeah, we'll talk about the other stuff, too. We'll talk about, you know, running for office and all that other kind of stuff. Hillary Clinton is all about money. Bill Clinton, all about money. This president is also all about money. When you look at the list of priorities that this president should have had, and you look at the fact that none of these things actually has been satisfactorily addressed or addressed at all, or addressed in a way that is deleterious to the well-being and the prosperity of people, you can, all the basics, you take the wrong turn, you take the wrong attitude on all of the basics, every single thing you would consider a basic thing that people should have. You don't have, you're shutting down the schools. This is the administration has shut down more schools than any administration in the history of the United States. Okay? And we know about even, when we talk about blacks and Latinos and the priority of education, and those are the very schools you're shutting down in those communities. You're talking about health care. We don't even want to deal with that. We, even now, there are 5 million people that he's not even addressing. These are the people who are living in the wrong state and therefore will have no coverage. And there's no Medicaid supplement for them. He's not even discussing that. You talk about historic records of unemployment. Historic. I'm not talking about that silly statistics, the statistic that they throw out saying, oh, 6.7% of the people unemployed. No. I said to you on this program, in some communities like the Native, First Nations people, unemployment rates of 80% in 15 of their territories, of 80% and higher. African Americans, not since the 1920s have we seen this level of unemployment. We're not even discussing unemployment among teenagers who are of working age and wish to work. Housing. Where is the housing? Okay? Where is the housing? At every basic level that you can say, well, let's see what you've done here. Well, let's see what you've done with this, what you've done with that. There is nothing to show except total neglect. It makes Moynihan's benign neglect look tame by comparison. And the only progress you could show is that you have, A, deported more people than anybody in the history of the United States every day, despite the fact that you supposedly have this immigration plan. You're deporting an average of 1,100 people per day. You have just this past week deported the 2 millionth person. You have increased the population in the prisons. Now that you've done fantastically under your watch, the prison population in the United States just simply has exploded. You produced a mindset, which is the same as your political adversaries, that people are poor because they just want to be. They refuse to take advantage of all the good things that are available to them. And it is basically a character flaw. And therefore, they deserve to be poor because they're not trying hard enough. This president, I'm telling you, is an abomination. And what needs to happen? People need to get this thing in their heads. Move beyond this business about who's the Democrat and who's the Republican. Get out of that. Neither party makes sense. The Democratic Party is an affront to any person right now who considers him or herself to be, well, a bit more progressive. It's an affront to you. It is an insult. And you ought to discard it. Get out of this party. Refuse to be part of it. It is not listening to you. It is not doing anything that is of benefit to you. There's a cabal, and they all want to basically get together, and they're talking to each other. They talk shop. How much money could they make after they leave? Or how much money could I make right now? That's what public office is for. They betray the people's interests without even a care. It doesn't cost them even a wink of sleep. So the party system itself should be regarded by us, the people, as a problem. It's an impediment to our progress individually and as a community. This process is not producing what we consider to be the good things that people should enjoy. We have a president talking about, you know, his human rights and what a really nice guy he is, busy now having people discuss. Now, who can we kill? Just let's see. What's on the list? Who's on the list? Oh, we have James. Okay, we're going to set the drone for James next week, Tuesday. We'll take him out. I mean, this is the way they're operating. This is a gangster government. The banks are still, they're doing whatever they want to do. We have Comcast signaling that they want to do whatever they want to do. We have the economy in the hands of people with very, very low thresholds of morality or some degree of integrity. And the whole country is basically a hostage to people of this type. A cakeistocracy, governed by the worst elements of society. That's what we have. . 2014 is important because, of course, all these re-election years, and that's what's important to Barack Obama. He's been on that agenda. He's going to show what a loyalist he is. He's going to raise record amounts of money for the Democratic Party to assure that the same cronies could get back in there. He's going to carry through this Obamacare, which is Hillary Clinton and the Heritage Foundation's program. And he's going to prove what a loyal soldier he is so that when he leaves office, somebody would remember the good things that he did and would keep him well employed for the rest of his life, him, his wife, and his family. He will live in a nice place. His children will go to the best universities, and they will, like Chelsea Clinton, you graduate today, and tomorrow a couple of calls are made, and you could walk into a $300,000 a year job. That's how it works. That's what politics is for. And if tomorrow somebody says, you know, we were trying to get into this country, but we're having a problem, oh, we could help you there. You send one of our guys and, you know, on a diplomatic mission. It is a bankrupt system. Bankrupt. And therefore, our job is to be real clear about that and understand that we have to change our way of thinking. The system continues to be bankrupt because we continue to sustain it. We continue to be part of it. We continue to give it life and give it authority over us. And we are supposed to be smart people. We really elect the dregs of society and still hope that we will get political representation. There's something wrong with your thinking. we put in office these people, we put them in charge, we give them access to the till. You could open it up anytime you want and divvy up the money any way you want. We have not seen any kind, we have not seen this level of indifference in a long, long, long time. But it is a kind of indifference that comes with a mindset that I am in power because I'm smart, and I'm certainly smarter than you. I deserve to be here. I have the wherewithal to compel you to like me, even if you don't like me. I have the power and the will to compel you to endorse me, to give me what it is I want, which is the story again of Comcast. They have the power and they have the money to compel this entire nation to bow to their desire to be a monopoly. And they will get it, more than likely. So far, the one line of resistance that we have, which is the Obama administration's FCC, it's indicating that they're okay with that. And that's how we get government. And that's how we get a well-ordered society. Just give these folks whatever it is they want to get wherever it is they want to go at whatever price that other people have to pay. I'm again asking folks, just re-examine your own political contradictions. We have great representation at a time when our communities are down the toilet, so there's something wrong there. You can't have all this representation and still have people suffering, and the magnitude in this so-called empire, this world-class nation, number one, the world-leading nation, the superpower nation, there's something wrong. You have all this wonderful, insightful leadership, and people are catching hell. Something wrong here. And, of course, the response that we're getting is they're catching hell because they choose to. They are pushing aside all the opportunities they have for progress and prosperity. They're spoiled. They need to go someplace where they're poor, where real poverty exists, and then they will know how great they have it here in America. This Democratic Party, because it is so enthusiastically supported by people who are suffering the most, this Democratic Party needs to be discarded. You need to get out of it. You need to move away from this putrid way of politics. This is not something that would sustain your life. It is not life-sustaining at all. It is a constant cycle of frustration and suffering. And we see clearly that increasingly it doesn't matter what your political stripes are. But it is important that you understand you do not belong in that class of the powerful. You are just cosmetic decoration. Every so often when they hold an election, they'll ask you to come out and pull a lever and then go home and then disappear. And then we'll take it from here. And the reward you get is you get your schools shut down, you get substandard health care, you get a record unemployment rate, you get to look for a job for several years before you could find one, you know, you get unsafe communities, you get an economy that is tanking because now you're not just suffering by yourself, everybody you know is almost similarly situated. We're all suffering. And yet, we have such a great governmental system. Examine for contradictions. Why don't you? I don't know what it would take, especially in communities that are distressed, especially in those communities. I don't know what it would take to cause people to re-examine this silly cycle that they place themselves in. If I had a wand, if to wave and to cause something to happen, I would absolutely cause it to happen that they gave an election and nobody showed up. And they all decided that they will, Republicans and Democrats alike. This two-party system has long outlived its usefulness to the people. I would wave a magic wand and cause vigorous discussion in communities to take place about forming their own organic links, their own organic parties that are tied to them and their interests, and people of good character who really do want to perform a public service, who really see the need for public service, who are impervious to this stuff that would catch up a Ray Nagin and others, and really perform in the interests of people. That's what I would do. But I would certainly start with number one, which is get the heck out of this party. Get out of it. And find something else. Create your own leadership. And seriously begin that discussion in your communities, in your homes, in your schools, in your organizations. Start the conversation about what else we need to do. This isn't working. Cut it out. Leave it. So those are my thoughts today. I would enjoy hearing from you. Anyway, every now and then I go on these things. I start to talk, speak my mind. But this has been on my mind for a while. And I'd like to hear from you, of course. I always enjoy getting your notes and your observations at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook at Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. I really do appreciate the fact that we can speak frankly with each other without having to edit and having to be politically correct and having to watch, you know, what we say in the sense that, oh, would we offend anybody? I think we have established a relationship here where we know that we're offering our genuine thoughts. And whether people agree or disagree, it's okay. The fact is that even in disagreement, we are genuinely disagreeing. You know, it's not one of those things where you disagree because you are called upon to disagree, that you have to because it is expected of you, but because you have thought about things and you disagree. Tomorrow is a very, very special program just for you. It's my nice little love gift for you, so maybe you want to tune in tomorrow, and I hope you can enjoy the program tomorrow that is planned. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory America. And again, reach me at leadstories@gmail.com or Facebook Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Thank you so much for putting up with me today. I really do appreciate it.